Hello and welcome to the Coaching Podcast, coaching for success in sport and business. Your host is Emma Doyle, the energy and high performance under pressure coach who is a world leader in unleashing human potential. Buckle up for this high octane session. Let them have it, coach.
G'day and welcome to the Coaching Podcast. Today I have the pleasure of chatting with Mark Lawaddy, who's the head tennis coach of Royal South Yarra Tennis Club. Now, Mark really sees himself as an educator of all things related to tennis. He's been involved for most of his life in a competitive or coaching role. His highest ATP ranking was 437 in singles and low 200s in doubles. The beautiful game has taken him all over the world. And what he really loves to talk about is the challenges of relationships and how they're intertwined with tennis that he finds so fascinating in helping people develop and create a winning mentality. So without further ado, let's get going. G'day, Mark, and welcome to the Coaching Podcast. I've got a question straight off the bat. Do you walk or run? Or what's your take on exercise?
It's actually funny you mentioned that because I rode my bloody bike in this morning. It left the house at 5 in the morning in the dark to ride, I think it's 14 Ks here. So I'm all three, but that question just popped into my head because I was listening to a podcast of a lady, an Australian lady, who's been doing a lot about body image and changing the mentality of what exercise is, instead of exercising to look ripped and look shaped, to be exactly that, to move your body, to think clearer, to enjoy the outdoors, to make your heart work, to make you think more clearly. And that's my a little change of mental philosophy now, but also being an old fart, I need to just move, otherwise I feel horrible.
I had such a clear moment when I was running this morning. It was so amazing that you just said that. Now, not every athlete has that. So listen, mate, I'm going to go straight to the Australian Open. It's just passed. Yep. And I know that you were working with a player there. And I've always loved being in the stands and watching you coach from afar. You might not have always known that I've been there at times over the years, but I've followed your career very closely because I always learn something. So could you share, even we're talking about clarity of mind and how players perhaps think differently sometimes. Could you share your AO experience with us?
Yeah, most definitely. I was lucky enough to be invited to help an American girl, Alicia Parks, who was, I think she had a best ranking of 40, but she was about 80 at that stage. Her first Aussie Open main draw last year, she was number one seed in qualies and went down second round. So I'd never met her. I met her the day before the tournament started, but day before first round. I was on a family holiday and, yeah, I know, perfect preparation. And couldn't get down there in time earlier. Like, I couldn't leave my family and we needed this break. So I was like, I'm there on the day before. So the 13th, she first round matches on the 14th of Jan. She plays on the 13th. And I said, I'll meet you in the gym as you warm up for your first hitting session. I had no idea. And, you know, we meet each other in the gym and said, hey, I'm your new Tinder coach. Thanks for swiping right. And I'm here to help as much as I can, which was, and I'd sent her a voice message previously just saying, listen, I'm a grown man. If I do stuff that you don't like, let me know. I'm here to help. So anything on the way you like to hear information, I've got some stuff from her coach. She wasn't able to travel from the States. So I got some background information on her, but I kind of wanted to hear from her and just say, you know, what's your goals? What do you like doing? How do you like your trainings? And I think that kind of made her a little bit comfortable. And so when I rocked in and gave her the Tinder spiel, she kind of was laughing and that broke the ice. So we had one on-court session where she was hitting with a girl. So that was my first introduction with her live. I'd watched some tapes to get a bit of an understanding. And I actually saw her play at Wimbledon. She was playing on a court beside Jason Kubler, who I was watching, who was finishing off a match. So I was watching his and watching hers. And I even told her during the tournament that while watching her match, she should do 5 unbelievable points. And I would be like, wow, this girl's got some skills. But then she would miss 3 of the most easiest or just do some of the crazy stuff. And I was like, this is weird. Like, she's hot, and then she's cold. And I didn't know. And then as the tournament evolved, she let me know that, you know, she's struggling with some, you know, some concentration issues, and you know, these factors kind of made me understand what she's all about. And, you know, my, probably her biggest thing she said to me, she goes, if I'm happy off the court and with my stuff that happens off the court, I'm going to play freer and play better. So that was my ticket to going, okay, be the village idiot, make her laugh, be the court jester, and just try to keep the mood light and engaging and fun and varied, because her concentration was a bit in and out. And so I felt like that's all I did for the time. And she, I think she responded in a way that made life a bit easier. And she gave me, and she was good. Like, she gave me feedback and just go like, no, I don't like that information, or I don't like the way that was said. So then you just find a different avenue. So it was pretty collaborative, which was good. And like, you're not going to reinvent the wheel when you meet a player the day before. You're just carrying on the work. So she's done all that preseason work and she knows how to play. But it was just interesting to, like, sometimes spectators see these elite and think they're robots and are amazing, but they're so human. You know, all they do is they do a skill that's highly skillful and they do it well, but they're fragile, they're vulnerable, they're emotional, they have highs, they have lows, they have problems just like you and me, but it's on a bit of a grand scale. And it was good in that sense. And the best part about Alicia was she was very open and very engaging and collaborative with the way she sees things and her changing of her behaviours. And I think she's in a state now that she wants to be different from where she was with her initial responses. So, you know, I'm guessing towards the back end of the year, she'll start, hopefully if she keeps working at it, she'll start to run hot, which I look forward to seeing that changing. And even to the fact that, like, on one of the days we're in line at the food and someone cut in and she just turned to me and smiled and she goes, Mark, the old Alicia would have had a confrontation right there and probably pushed that person. And now I just smile and let them in. And I was going, whoa, who is this person? Like, what happened to the old Alicia? And it may have been just like a simple thing, but that's, you know, step one in a bloody long journey. And like the day after, you know, she, famous coconuts that you can get there at the Aussie Open, you know, she went to stab it, get the straw in, and the straw fell on the ground. And normally that would ruin a day. And she just looked at me and she goes, I'll get another straw. And I was like, whoa, this person's changing. So it was like baby step. For us, it was bait, like, you know, nothing. But for her, it's a start of a shift in mindset. So yeah, it was amazing. And she had a tough after Aussie Open. She's had, I think, three or four first round losses in tournaments. And, you know, I saw some of the highlights and I couldn't travel with her. She asked me to go on the road and, you know, with my family commitments and my work commitments, I'd love to, but I just couldn't. And, you know, and I messaged her and saying, you know, good things are around the corner, the way she was playing. And she's going, yeah, she goes, I feel like I'm doing the right things. And I'm just like, my message was like, it's good things are going to happen, you know, if she keeps persisting at it. So, yeah, it was an exciting time. It was weird, but, like, you know, it just proves that, like, we're all bloody human, irrelevant of what you do. We always sometimes compare and think they're better than me, but, like, we all have our own little situations that we're not happy with and vulnerable with and don't like.
Yeah, and the one thing that you said off air as well that I loved is the fact that you needed to do something for 3 minutes and then move on. Sometimes we think about just hitting cross court forehands
for
half an hour like a robot. We think that's what the pros do. You share that you know, again, didn't suit her personality around.
Yeah, and it's kind of like Kyrgios. Kyrgios, you can't put him in a box of training. Like, you got to just allow the creator to be creative. And, you know, and because Alicia had issues and struggles with concentrating for long periods of time, it was just do something well for a burst. And before it starts going downhill and you lose her, then you just change and go to the next thing, which is different to, like, a lot of coaches, and I'm sure what you've done in the past is you try to stick at something till you get it better and better. But it was just like, no, do that, do something else, go back to that, which changed my coaching mindset to a big degree, because normally you just do the opposite. You stick with one thing. You can have one drill for an entire session almost. But she was like, I need to do different things, and you just chop and change, and which made it fun as well, because, you know, an hour on court, you could be doing 30 different activities.
Yeah.
Which was, you got to keep going through the Rolodex and through your plan of like, what's next, and fly by the seat of your pants a little bit. But yeah, it was fun and challenging.
And what I want to also just add to our listeners out there is to experiment with kids learn best through opposites, not just kids, but adults. And don't forget, our podcast is Coach for Success in Sport and Business. So on the sporting scale, and if we take our sport, particularly market in tennis, if I want to teach depth, then working on the drop shot and working on the shorter swing to feel the drop shot, and then working on depth and then go back to the drop shot and then go back to depth is another great example, rather than working on depth for an hour and really seeing micro improvements. Yeah. But sometimes experimenting with opposites, I highly recommend that. And in the workplace, what I want to pick up on for the business coaches is, or managers and leaders listening to this podcast, is that you will have a 44% in customer retention when people in your workplace are actually focusing on strengths. So doing what they do best. If I'm in a role doing what I do best, then we've got that customer retention and a higher performance in me. So that's my next question to you, Mark. When somebody comes to you, how much do you focus on strengthening strengths versus improving weaknesses?
Yeah, well, I find, with our club role here, like, you're getting a lot of recreational players. You know, like a lot of people, when they watch the TV, it looks so perfect, and you're never going to be that. Like, your style's different to my style. So it's like, it's more about what I like to ask, you know, they basically may have not played for X amount of years and they want to get back into it. So it's their friends going, hey, let's go down for a hit. I want to at least be able to rally and control the ball. So it's doing all the really technical stuff is not so much, but it's more about improving the understanding of the game and then doing that as best you can. Like, if your backhand's not great, then, you know, when your forehand's good, let's just do lots of forehands, because all of a sudden, if you enjoy something, you're going to do it a little bit more or a lot more, you know, and use your self-esteem and the way you respond to the activities are definitely better when I feel like the headspace is better, and especially with young kids as well. Like, you know, whenever a parent sees a kid play sport, sometimes the first thing, and even as competitors, you always remember the stuff that you didn't do well. Like, you know, I've started to do with some of the players is, like, you know, when they do things well and play well, like, do you ever sit down at the end of a match, go, wow, these are the things that I did really well, and it was because of this that I did these well. But if you play a bad match, you could write a novel of all the things you did poorly, and you'll spend days mulling over it. But on a good day, you just go, wow, that was awesome, and you leave. You never spend the time to go, wow, I played unbelievable. Why? Was it, how was my focus? How was my intensity? You know, how was my mindset? How was my responses to adversity? We never do. We just kind of walk away, and it always seems to be the negative that we harp on. So, like, I do like the idea of doing more of the good stuff. When is there not going to be something that's not great? There's always going to be something that's going to be there that's not as comfortable and not as good. And also depends on the personality. If the person's able to respond well to some things that are not great, then you can work through it. But if they get emotional, then it's like, you know, for a paying customer, they want a kind of a good time as well, and they want to enjoy the session. So it's a little bit more like you can make the good really good. Like, even Steffi Graf had a sliced backhand and didn't have a topspin backhand, and she was number one in the world. Like, do the good unbelievably good. Like, so, yeah, I like that side of it. What do you normally go to?
Yeah, I think more and more these days, I focus on really strengthening the strengths. And if there's a way, like in the, I'm a lot more in the business coaching world these days. Yeah. So we talk about the B's, you know, if you've got a weakness or an area for development, as I like to say from the sporting language, the reframe of a weakness is an area for development. Yeah. You can buy someone's time to fill in that gap. You could borrow, you can barter.
Yeah, totally.
Right. And I'm, I played like Steffi Graf. So I was all about hiding the top speed I can.
Yeah.
But I think that also in today's world, we sometimes focus, you know, when somebody comes to a tennis coach per se and you say, what do you want to work on? They'll always go to, you know, well, my top spin backhand is shit. So
yeah, let's do it.
Let's
yeah,
focus
yeah.
on that. And so 95% of the lesson is on that. And it's the micro moments of improvement are so small that it's, I think it's a balance and a dance. And every athlete is different, as you said. But I more and more focus on the strengths and how do we mirror those or just sedate the and hide some of the areas for development for sure, because tennis doesn't reward perfection, it rewards bravery and grit.
Yeah.
Talk to me about problem solving. I know that that's a passion area for both of us as it relates to coaching. Do you believe that we overcoach these days?
My philosophy is almost like when you toss the racket, like until when you shake hands, it's just that period of time there. It's testing your ability to solve the problem out there and go, hey, what's, and then it's kind of life. Like, and you know, I'm now luckily a parent, and you understand that you don't want your kids to fail. Like, you don't want to see that, and you don't want them to fall, but that's where they learn the most. Like, you're never going to let them fall and be in danger. So it's a safety fall. But, you know, I think probably society is, we all want to be awesome at everything and everything's rainbows and, you know, and it's wonderful. And you don't face the adversity and the hardships where the lessons are learned. Like, that's where the magic happens, you know, where your back's up against the wall and how do you solve it? Like, what do you do? And, you know, that goes to, you know, daily life, kids traveling, you know, here and there and on public transport, great. Like, don't get driven everywhere. Like, find out how you can get to A to B by yourself, like, and you learn independence. So I love that side of it. And, you know, and were you able to outthink your opponent? You know, they threw something at you, and even in a business that you get thrown a curly one, what do? You got to think quickly on your feet and be able to go, well, I've got to do this, this, and this. Doesn't mean you're going to get it right. And with tennis, you may run out of time because you're on a scoreboard, you may run out of games to problem solve it. So you got to think on your feet. But yeah, I think it's changed a lot now with everything's on your phone and you don't have to think. All you have to do is type.
Yeah. In a match, we problem solve, or we have to problem solve.
Yeah.
How could a coach work on that in practice? What do you do?
Yeah. I think sometimes the more questions we ask of them instead of us giving them the answer, do you think that's the right option for there? Yes. Why? Why do you think that shot wasn't as good as you would like? You know, if you make an error and you throw your hands up in the air, go, bloody hell, what's going on? Like, okay, what could you have done better in that scenario? You've just lost 5 points in a row. What's going to change now? Do you rush or do you take some time? How have I won the points? Do you feel like you've got a bunch of momentum now or not? You know, and then what can you do? You know, who's holding the cards right now? Who's in the better position, you or me? Like, and it's me, then okay, what can you do to try to turn that around? I think, I'd never like to give too many answers. I'd like to probably give a lot more questions and what do they think and what do they see? And, you know, obviously sometimes you just get the standard, like, I don't know. And then you delve a little bit deeper and they probably do know, they just don't know how to articulate it. But I think sometimes the answers are given to them on a plate, they don't get to think. Otherwise, you're like, you're at school, it goes in this ear and out the other ear, instead of being able to then go, okay, if I say it, then at least I've had to think about it and try to work on that response and that answer and give a bit of a view of what's going on compared to just going internally, like, you know, I'm playing so badly.
Well, anyone who listens to this show knows me and knows that every single episode I encourage coaches to ask more questions. There's no doubt about it. So that's singing to the way that my brain works. And not
otherwise, you're basically just a textbook.
Yes, yes.
You know, it's just flip a page and find the answer. There it is, forehand, cross-court into the bottom of the net. There's like, it's just too many variables in that. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, we do a good job. We're almost redundant to a certain degree. Like, you know, the player can then make those decisions out on court and can understand, and you can just add a little bit of lipstick to it all and let them, you know, be the ones that that are, you know, that can find a way and do all those things.
Yeah. So what is a winning mentality anyway? When you say you help people create a winning mentality, what is that?
One of them, I think, is to find the why, like why are they doing it? Why are they playing at whatever level, like either elite or just socially, could be for health, it could be for mental well-being, whatever it is. And I probably feel like I, you know, to my detriment, in my vision, especially when working a little bit more at the elite stuff, I kind of felt like people didn't take me seriously because I was a little bit more, you know, say positive and it probably doesn't sound like the right way to say it, but a bit more lighter and a little bit more not as deadly serious. And like, I'm not taking this stuff to the grave with me. I'm not losing sleep over it. Like it's light and positive. And, you know, if I'm laughing on court and we're enjoying it, like I used to think that from an elite level was not the right kind of look. It wasn't as professional as some of the others that are like this stone faced, deadly serious. So yeah, to me, so far, a lot of the people tend to respond better in that safer, you know, lighter, fearless environment compared to, you know, having been whacked with a stick. I don't think that works. That could work for a small period of time, but you know, are you going to be a well-rounded human? Probably not. So, I think the winning mentality is to understand what is your why, like why you're doing it, and then just embrace it and just do it. Like, you know, and wherever it takes you, whatever grade, like if you win one social match or you win a tournament, it's irrelevant. If you're enjoying the time to be out there, that's an engaging winning mentality for me. The outcome is just the outcome. That's, you know, that's not a massive focus compared to the doing it as best you can.
Yeah, I think that's a great message for our listeners out there. Even at the highest level, it is important that they understand their why and not just because I'm good at it or my parents have pushed me into it and now this is the only thing I've got left. And I think so much of tennis players wrap their identity into I am a tennis player versus I choose to play tennis. What are your thoughts on that?
It's funny, like when you win, everyone's around you. And, you know, the first response you always hear, even through junior days when you come off the court, did you win? Did you win? So you're it's almost like your happiness and your emotional state is based on the win-loss. You know, not too many kids or even parents go, wow, did you really enjoy that out there today? That was your first response. It never is. It's always so much of a win-loss, which is, to me, is dangerous. Like it's, you know, even at the Australian Open, there's 128 players in the draw, one person wins. You know, if you were to ask all those players, I'm sure a lot of those players would have had successful weeks. You know, I know Alicia made the third round. For her, that was a massively successful week, you know, and it's the third round. She's won two matches, whereas, you know, one person wins the entire tournament. So everyone has their own little success story, you know, compared to just that one person. So, you know, there's a lot of potential happiness in that. You know, I'm sure they're upset that they lost, but there's still some wins with that. So, yeah, I get a little bit, you know, not scared, but you get a little bit worried when players, you know, they rock up and you see they're up and about because they've obviously had a win, or they're down and out, you know, when they've lost and they take it to heart. And, you know, throughout the entire year, you're going to lose a hell of a lot more than you're going to win. you know, even in the business side, you're going to probably take a lot more hits than you have successes. But then you've got to celebrate not only, not so much the success of the win, but like even if you lose, like be proud of your effort. Like that's a big one for me is like, you know, did you give it the best you could possibly do?
Mm.
Some days, yes, some days, no. But, you know, we're all human, so you're going to have some good days and some not so good days. So, yeah, being wound into your winning is going to make me happy and losing is going to make me sad. Yeah, it doesn't work. Not longevity, unfortunately.
Yeah, I bet you've seen plenty of players that have quit the sport or dropped out because of exactly what you just said. So
it goes back to the problem solving. Like you're going to face adversity. Like what are you going to do? Like if it gets hard, do you just go, I'm done, I'll give it up because it could be my real first taste of hardship because I've had such a cushioned, velvet gloved lifestyle that this is my first bit of adversity and it's too hard, I'm out of here. Like, yeah, go work in a factory 14 hours a day, you know, earning a dollar a day and then talk about some hardship and some adversity. There's always people would love to swap and be in your shoes, that's for sure.
In one to a maximum of three words, what do you think makes a great coach?
Understanding, listening, openness.
And could you provide an example of each of those, please?
Understanding. Well, I think, you know, when a player comes to the coach, it's like the coach has got to ask a whole bunch of questions beforehand. Like, you know, what do you do well? How long have you been playing? What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Playing for fun, you're playing for fitness. So that understanding, and because you're not going to try to turn this person who's playing socially into a hard, dedicated 12 hours a week of training. It's just not going to be. That's the difference. So the understanding of that and also understanding, you know, where they are, you know, physically, emotionally, like, you know, you get some, you know, parents that are coming down and it's like, this is my 1 hour break a week where I can just go tools down and forget about stuff and just smash balls and like, just let them smash balls. Like you don't have to necessarily see massive improvements. So understanding why they're into the sport. Once they start to talk about the why they're playing is then, okay, then if you really understand what they're saying and you're open to listening and you don't have your head like, I've got to make this forehand this or this backhand, they've got to play a certain way or we're going to do this no matter what, is then having the flexibility to go, this is what they want, give them what they want. You know, if they my backhand's horrible, then fine, you know, don't, and they don't really want to do it, don't go there. Like just do the other stuff and do that well. And also just hearing, especially with the kids, like sometimes they'll come to you and talk about their days and talk about the challenges that they're having off court with their friends, socially, emotionally, and just being, you know, not a fixer, just be a person they can go and an adult they can just go and offload to and be able just to talk without judgment and just go, yep, you know, I hear like that's challenging and that's tough because, you know, sometimes the other adults that they're talking to are parents and they're maybe scared of that they're going to be judged for whatever reason. So yeah, just being that listening person. Openness, yeah, like share some of your vulnerability to them because, you know, when you're side by side, you talk about all things. So, you know, and sometimes even at an elite level, like, you know, the players are going through some, you know, difficult moments and having that openness to share your hard times and not, you know, for them to also help you. You know, you can spend a lot of time with the players on the road at when they're full time. So having that openness to do that and also openness to try different things. You know, sometimes, you know, coaches can be set in their ways, you know, and you hear people that haven't played for a while and they come back in court and go, God, back in the day, I got told to step with my left foot forward on every hit. And why not? Is it different now, you know, and you got to be open to change and you know, the game evolves and just because I did something a year ago doesn't mean that it's still relevant, or for this person, it may be something totally different. And just with the internet, with all the stuff that's on social media, there's so many amazing skills you can pick up from different sports and different avenues that just, you know, fill up your bag with new tricks, you know, and you can relate it to tennis and you can relate it to off-court stuff as well. So the more of that, the better. And also personally, I guess for me is getting better in my relationship with my loved ones makes me better, because then I get a better understanding. Like, I know I don't do things great off the court, you know, in my relationship, the way I respond. So learning all that stuff then helps me communicate with you as an adult, as a person, as a kid, and then also to maybe understand there's other kids respond and other adults respond in a similar way like I do. So improving me off the court with the way I handle things can definitely help, and you know, and be open, and God, we're far from perfect.
Also, I know that you're passionate about being the eternal student yourself.
Forever, seeing your podcast, and I said before, seeing your podcast and your people, and you just go, wow, there's just so many skilled and like so intelligent people, like that stuff that goes on that I'm not a mega deep thinker, and you just go, you know, people are in a different realm, which is really exciting, because like I feel like my world is this big and then they're like this, and you just stop to think about it, you can learn from so many, and it's just constant, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is good as well. And I guess your philosophy changes all the time. Like I'm sure with you, with the way you started when you're in your 20s is different to now, and it should be, because if you're the same person you are then, there's not much. You haven't grown a hell of a lot. Yeah, and look at your career, like how it's turned from tennis to this, and God knows where it goes from there. Like it's. You don't know what's going to happen next.
Oh, this is my favorite thing about the podcast, honestly, is these interviews, is these chats, because I get so much out of them every time I chat to, you know, people who are coaches, who are real in the trenches, and whether you're in business or sport or tennis, this is why I love it.
What do you find from the business side of things that with all your, I'm sorry to turn this on you a little bit, but what do you find like the couple of main things from the business element that can be really related to tennis, so to even fast track it? So what do you find from that side of things?
Yeah, so with my book, when I synthesized the data of 520 of the world's leading coaches into the top 10 practices in what makes a great coach, what I then did is 328 of those were just tennis. So then I isolated that tennis data, and 105 were business coaches, and then 71 were sports coaches from over 21 different sports. So if I look at just what the business coaches said make a great coach, it was a lot higher in empathy and listening, for example.
Yeah.
The business coaches do a wonderful job of asking great questions, being really doing a lot more homework around real empathy, being able to see what somebody else sees, and truly like present listening.
Yeah.
And then the sports coaches were very, if I just took the data from the tennis coaches, they were very high on passion, very high on resiliency. So there's two examples of why I run the podcast.
Very different, isn't it?
And two examples of why I run the podcast. And remember, my biggest aha moment was when I started studying business coaching, because I was more of a technical junkie sort of, you know, really loved being a very direct teacher. And then I learned how to be a business coach. I had to run sessions where I wasn't allowed to give one directive command. And this is somebody who loved giving directive commands and thought that that's what coaching really was.
Yeah.
And I really think that's a distinction between teaching, and sometimes we need to teach certain moments. But the older I get, yes,
the more experience you get.
The more experience, thank you. Not beautiful reframe, I'll pay you later for that one. The more I'm understanding that the true value lies in the deeper the connection of listening, empathy, curiosity, superpowers of a coach to truly then bring that into the sports world is definitely one of the reasons I do the podcast.
Yeah.
And why I seek out unique guests who are living and breathing these types of principles and mentalities. So thank you.
I guess from a business side, when they're dealing with, you know, large organizations and lots of people, there's just so many varied people, that whole empathy and that understanding and that connection is massive to get them where. And I guess that when you're looking, I guess, more of the elite, you know, the player, the high profile player and the coach, it's that one-on-one connection. You know, when you talk someone like Ash Barty, when she was working with Craig, when she was playing with Tyes, like that was a perfect fit, you know, like a father figure, comforter, you know, calm disposition. Like if she wouldn't have worked with someone who was boisterous and loud and right. It was just not the right, and the relationship and you know, his ability to understand and care, you know, for her needs.
And in the business world, the statistic is that 70% of the time someone will leave a job, even if they don't have another job, due to a poor manager or leader. So you think about even that in the sports world or as a coaching world, if that person doesn't care and they're not curious and they don't listen, they don't have empathy, then people are going to leave. They'll just be totally unhappy. It doesn't matter if you're in business or in sport. So yeah. I think that stat is really, really relevant. So, Mark, my final question for you, because I could talk for another 3 hours with you very easily. So to keep everyone's attention span, our season 6 question finale is, what disruptive idea do you have that will impact the way we coach in 2030?
Geez, disruptive. God, we could be talking AI technology here. That's right.
We could.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, I'll be on the beach in Thailand with my feet up or dipping in the water with my goggles on, coaching here in Melbourne with the other player virtually on a computer screen, and on my fourth cocktail by about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and that'll be the standard practice. Yeah, that'll be quite productive.
Disruptive. Very disruptive.
Yeah. Wow. 2030. Oof. That's a tough one. Yeah. Like I look at it potentially from the coaching role and or what coaches do and maybe the industry. I'd like the balance of work and life to change. Like that, I think is a big one. I think a lot of industries have, you know, it used to be you used to work from home and you were a slacker and everyone knew you were off having a good time for the day and not really doing work, but that's all changed and people are working remotely in all these other fields. So I think maybe from a tennis industry point of view, I'm talking kind of clubland and coaches, that there'll be a shift and a balance in making sure, because I don't know about you, you're hearing that it's so hard to get people in this industry now. Like it's not a career option, it's a hobby turned into a career. So especially for the female side, it's just so tough. And you know, female coaches are like unicorns. Like to find women that want to be in this industry and on the court, it's tough, and it's such a blokey blokes world, which is an issue in itself. So you know, I think being able to combine the balance of your home life with your work life, you know, and getting that better, so then coaches can stay in this environment for longer and deliver a far better product, because they're not missing out on their family life, but then they're still able to deliver really good instruction and really good relationship building with others because they're in a good headspace. And I'm probably saying that out of, you know, my personal situation, and I've been forced into that to a certain degree to alter my work schedule. And I've just felt it that being able to look after stuff that's happening off the court has definitely made me far more appreciative to be on the court and value my time more on the court, and also value my club more because they're open to that as well. So I think maybe potentially that could be the the changing culture, just like working from home was a massive changing culture, and you know, and not being in the office was a massive changing culture. Who would have thought that 10 years ago or even 8 years ago that you know, was going to be the norm, and could a business function like that? So it's happened in other areas and other industries. So yeah, maybe from a clubland perspective and a coaching environment perspective, that, you know, I would love to see that and have a better balance, so then we get longevity and people are not getting burnt out and they do get to spend time with their loved ones and families, and also then do a bloody good job once they're on the tennis court, because, you know, it's value time and they're fresh to really do it instead of stale and it's Groundhog Day.
Yep. Well, from Tinder coaching to finance.
That's a bit weird, isn't it? That's right.
No, it's hilarious. It's hilarious. To finding your why by understanding, listening, be open to be vulnerable and ask more questions. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you. Thank you so much for everything you do. Thank you for allowing me to watch your journey with some of those pro players over the years and teaching me the importance of it's okay to have fun. That's what I, you know, I always question, you know, I need to be more serious or I need to be more this way on court. At the end of the day, it's, you hit the nail on the head. It's how do we bring the best of our personality out based on the needs of the player?
And I guess that's why I like working with kids, because we're on the same intelligence wavelength. Sometimes there's some six-year-olds out here that are way smarter than me. So, I feel like I don't have the stresses of anyone else's real world life. Like my stressful thing is, like, I've had 4 or 5 hours in a row on the court, you know, and you know, people are coming to us for enjoyment and because of their passion and their health. So, like, it's a bloody good environment to be in. Like, we're not coming with people dumping the worst of their worst on top of us. So, you know, if you know, not getting the best result out of a forehand's the most stressful part of my day, then geez, I'm lucky and privileged to be in that spot, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, coaching is just that. We're very privileged to do what we do and impact those that we coach. So just thanks again, mate. Appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Thank you. Keep up the great work. It's exciting for all of us to be able to tap into all these people that we would have no resources to get into, so, and to hear them speak and to learn from them. So, yeah, unbelievable work that you're doing, and it's going to be exciting the year ahead.
Appreciate you, mate, and thank you, everyone, for listening.
The Coaching Podcast is sponsored by Transition Coach for Athletes, a global coaching, mentoring, and US college sporting scholarship placement service. The service helps athletes navigate the often challenging world of choosing your best college fit while maximizing sports performance. Visit www.transitioncoachforathletes.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating review on your podcast listening device. And don't forget to tell a fellow coach about the show. The ball is in your court to take action and enjoy your coaching.